Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. Now, the Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally on 29 AM and FM radio stations 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit my webpage. That's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on the black market right after this. Well, 3,300 years ago, Moses instructed our fathers. He said, "You shall not have in your bag diverse weights, a great and a small. You shall not have in your house diverse measures, a great and a small, but you shall have a perfect and a just weight, a perfect and a just measure shall you have." Well, you know, our founding fathers at the Constitutional Convention back in 1787 followed that scriptural principle when they put into our federal constitution at Article 1, Section 10, these 17 words. It says, "No state shall make anything but gold or silver coin a tender in payment of debts." But in 1933, President Roosevelt took our gold away, and in 1964, President Johnson took silver coin out of circulation. Now, in place of just weights and balances, these two presidents introduced our current practice of the first, the second, and the fifth planks of the Communist Manifesto into our monetary system, and they gave us Federal Reserve notes in place of gold-backed treasury bills and clad coinage in place of silver coins. Now, in the intervening 70 years or so, we Americans have gone from being the world's number one creditor nation until today we're the world's number one debtor nation. Now, who do you think were the better financial planners for our nation? Moses and our founding fathers, or Franklin D. Roosevelt and Lyndon Baines Johnson? Now, if you'd like to learn more about hard money and how to use it properly, it's another of the many lessons in my private business school. I conduct that school here at the law school twice a year. If you'd like to learn more, why don't you call and order my free general law CD package? That's free. It's a 4-hour commentary on the law in general. It's educational, informative, entertaining, best of all, free of charge. Why don't you call right now and order one? The number is 417-273-4967. The business school is available on compact disc, along with all the paperwork to go along with it, 58 lessons for adult home study. If you're online, you can go to the website, georgegordon.org, click onto the email machine, and send an email request for that free general law CD package. That's georgegordon.org, or call direct, 417-273-4967. All right, last time we were talking about the great Mogambo. He's called the Mogambo Guru, the maddest or the angriest guy in economics. Now, this guy's no dummy. He publishes a newsletter every week. It's published on Kitco. That's kitco.com, K-I-T-C-O.com. Doesn't cost anything. If you don't like him and you don't agree with him, well, then, you know, tune out. But every week he'll come in and he cites, and I'm going to give you a citation here. He reads other newsletters, just like I do, and once in a while I read those to you over the air. Every week, I think it comes out on Monday, every Monday you can get the Mogambo Guru, and it comes in across my desk. I don't know exactly what day, but I think it's Monday or Tuesday, or maybe it's Wednesday, first part of the week. My mail piles up and articles pass across my desk, and we start deciding here, editing and deciding, well, what are we going to do next week, and what are we going to talk about? And so this week I said, let's talk about the black market. The black market. And I was inspired by the Mogambo. He's morose, and he's just down in the mouth and depressed, and oh my God, look at this inflation coming along. The glass is half empty. And he's giving us a report every week, and he's saying, boys and girls, we're following economic policies that are going to have consequences, that are going to have results, and they're going to be bad results for most Americans. Now, some Americans are going to have good results, and I'm one of those, or at least I hope to be. Yeah, I hope to have good results. I'm betting on inflation. I'm betting on the collapse of the economy worldwide. I'm betting on the New World Order. I'm betting on Armageddon and the second coming of Christ, if you want to know what I'm betting on. I think that's all in the cards and it's all coming about. And I need to be the guy that's in the right place at the right time with the mostest for the leastest so that I can profit the greatest. And so, listen to the Magumbo as he gives us another piece of sage wisdom and advice by telling us that in the economic focus column this week, in the Economist magazine, they ask, quote, are central banks watching the wrong measure of inflation? Unquote. Magumbo says, well, of course they are. But when you are a magazine with a reputation to uphold, you have to ask these kinds of silly questions to set up the rest of the article. Anyway, they reference a guy by the name of Ian Morris, who is an economist with HSBC, who includes in his estimate of inflation the things like housing prices that the government conveniently leaves out when they're deliberately trying to disguise inflation. So when Mr. Morris does this, he figures that inflation was actually running at 4.9%, which is bad enough, but in the true spirit of you ain't seen nothing yet, the Economist magazine updated this methodology to show that inflation is currently running at 5.5% in the United States. All right, I'm going to pause right there, Mr. Magumbo. And in the spirit of quoting somebody else, because you, the great Magumbo, are too damn dumb to know what you're talking about, and so you went to The Economist, well, I'm too damn dumb to know what I'm talking about, so I'm going to go to Bob Chapman and the International Forecaster, and let me quote to all of you out there in Listenersville, under commodities, page 20, this week's International Forecaster, Chapman reports, early this week, the Reuters CRB index surged to a 24-year high of 304.77, the highest for the index since February of 1981. The index of 17 commodities is up 8.4% this year, after rising 11% last year, 8.9% in 2003, 23% in 2002, and of course inflation is only 3.3%. Coffee hit a 5-year high, copper is at a 15-year high, aluminum at a 10-year high. This is demand-driven fundamentals. As we cited before, the Goldman Sachs Commodity Index was up 27% in 2004, hit its high of 374.89 in 2004. When oil hit $55.67 a barrel, crude oil prices are up 42% in the past year. That was assisted by colder than usual weather, which we predicted in October, and a 16% increase in the demand from China, which is also predicted by us last year. All right, let me pause here for a moment, Mr. Magumbo, and ask you this question. How in the world can prices of commodities go up 8.4%, 11%, 8.9%, and 23%, and the inflation rate only be 5.5%? I mean, you know, I'm just an old farm boy, an old country boy out here, but I go to the store, you know, twice a year, whether I need to or not. And even though I'm secluded in the middle of the Ozarks, away from all of the big cities and the hustle and the bustle and the smoke and the pollution that goes on around me, I noticed that the price of gasoline in my local station over the local DX station over the past year went from $1.59, and now they're selling it for $1.98. Well, how much is that? $1.59 to $1.98, 68, 78, 88, 98. Let's see, is that about 39 cents? I think it is. $1.60 to $2.00 is 40. Take away 2 pennies, that's 38. Add another penny, that's 39. That's 39 cents. Now it was selling for $1.59. So take 39 and divide that by 159. Isn't that up 25% in 1 year? You know, everything that I buy here, now I can't speak for the rest of you people out there in the United States, but everything that I'm buying here in Ozark County, Missouri, is up by 10 to 15%. And Chapman says that the real inflation rate in the United States of America is running 12 to 14% in the year 2004 and so far in 2005. 12 to 14%. That's what I'm experiencing in Ozark County. It's a little higher, Mr. Magambu, a little higher than 5.5%. Now, the CPI, Chapman points out, doesn't contain things like housing prices. We don't include the fact that housing prices are up 25%, a little over that, 25% over the last 6 years. That the median price of houses in the United States went up from $161,000 to $197,000 in 6 years. We don't include that. They don't include gasoline. I guess it's because the people at the CPI, at the Department of Labor, don't live in houses, don't buy houses, and don't burn gasoline. And they probably don't eat food either. Of course, I don't want to go out and buy very much food. I try to grow what I've got here. I got a few cows and a couple of sheep, and I stick a couple of seeds in the ground, and I got a couple of apple trees, and I get by, you know, pretty well. But I want to point out that everything is up. And in addition to that, our government has moved our monetary supply from $3.5 to $9.5 trillion from 1987. And they told us that they wanted to increase it to $13.5 trillion. By the end of 2005. Now, if they succeed in increasing the number of dollars in circulation from $3.5 trillion in 1987 to $13.5 trillion by the end of 2005, now they got to hustle because they've only got 10 more months to go. But I'm just pointing out that if they succeed in doing that, your 1987 dollars are going to be worth 25 cents each. Do you think that's a good public policy to follow? Mr. Magambu doesn't think so. He keeps telling us that that's bad public policy. I agree with Mr. Magambu. But I think Mr. Magambu has missed the point. I don't think inflation is running at 5.5%. As bad as that is, I think it's more like 10%. Maybe even getting out there toward 15%. My God, it might be getting out there to where it was in 1979, 80, 81. Do you remember those 21% interest rates, boys and girls? Now listen, Mr. Magambu is trying to give you a warning. Now I know that he's not as prestigious as Dan Rather, Tom Brokejaw, and Peter Jennings, but I think he's got more on the ball than Pete, Tom, and Dan. And I just wanted to throw my two cents worth in and say, and on top of that, Mr. Magambu, I don't think you're up high enough either. Now he goes on to say the damn lying government is still maintaining that inflation is low, very low, almost non-existent low, they tell us, which is such an obvious lie that the Magambu laughs. Ha ha. When he hears those lying idiots say these things, although he knows why they're doing that, so that people do not freak out, and so that the Magambu does not freak out, and so that the Magambu will not be calling them up all the time and screaming at the poor receptionist at the Federal Reserve about how damnable the Fed is creating so much money and credit that the resultant inflation is going to destroy us all, and how I want to talk to Alan Greenspan or whoever in hell is in charge down there, and I'm yelling, don't you hang up on me again. But she does anyway. And then it's a long drama of me hitting the speed dial and her saying hello, and I say don't, and then there's a scream and a click and a dial tone all day long until my finger is sore from hitting the speed dial button, which makes me even more angry. Well, that's pretty humorous. I couldn't agree more. But the bottom line is, well, what are you and I going to do about this? Are we going to spend all of the rest of our lives complaining about it, or are we going to do something intelligent and constructive and see if we can't profit from it? Listen, I can't make Mr. Greenspan shut off the money spigot. And I can't make Mr. Bush stop these insane wars that are going on. And, you know, if it was up to me, I would come to you and tell you, look, Social Security is a chain letter Ponzi scheme, and I'm going to sick Elliot Sp- Spitzer on you, and I'm going to have it closed down because it's an illegal gambling enterprise. It's a Tontine insurance wagering scheme, and they're prohibited in every state in the union, and we're going to prohibit it even though it's sponsored by the federal government. I would eliminate Social Security. The third rail of politics. And of course, if I was president, I would be impeached, probably assassinated, and certainly never reelected. But that's the truth, and that's what needs to be done. It isn't going to be done. And all of the people of America who want to continue to participate in Social Security do so voluntarily. So who is George Gordon to come in here and interfere with the happiness and success of 280 million of my fellow Americans? I'm the only man in America that wants to abolish Social Security and stop throwing my money away. Well, gosh, I dropped out of Social Security and I stopped throwing my money away, and so I don't have anything to complain about, so why should I get embroiled in the Social Security argument? Let's take inflation. Inflation affects Americans who deal in dollar-denominated assets. I had a piece of property that was denominated in dollar assets, and I sold it and converted it to 1,000 ounces of gold, buried the ounces of gold in a hole in the ground. I disposed of that. Now I'm waiting until the real estate bubble breaks, and then I'm going to go back into the marketplace and buy that same 40 acres back at 10 cents on the dollar. And the guy that bought it and paid the $400,000 for it, he's going to lose his shirt. He went over to the bank and borrowed the money. The bank paid the money, and I'm sitting here happy as a clam at high tide. My gold broker is as happy as a clam at high tide. The Mogambo should be as happy as a clam at high tide, since he doesn't hold any dollar-denominated assets. Do you, Mr. Mogambo? You don't have any dollar-denominated assets, now do you? Because if you do, you're not following your own advice. And I'm pretty sure that the Mogambo is following his own advice, and he's probably not near as dumb as he would like to have us believe. If he's smart enough to know that the damn government's lying to us, he's no dummy. Most Americans think the government's telling us the truth, and that they're honest folks, and they're really good at heart. I think that they're lying folks, and I don't think they're good at heart. I think they're wicked and evil. And I told you last program, I said, if you never do business with a thief, you'll never be stolen from. It's a business principle that I've discovered over the years. I've dealt with a lot of thieves, and sure enough, they stole from me. And I dealt with a lot of honest people, and they didn't steal from me. And, you know, over time, trial and error, and a long, long period of time, many, many years, you can finally, when you get to be an old, old man like I am, you can come to a conclusion. If you never do business with a thief, you'll never be stolen from. Government is a thieving enterprise. Do not do business with the government, and you won't be stolen from. I stopped doing business with the government in 1978, and they haven't stole a dime from me since. So I'm not complaining about inflation in the United States. I think it's there. I think it's rampant. I think it's much greater than the Mogambo is letting on. And he's being very conservative. He's just using the government's own numbers and Barron's magazine. But you know, just from our own observation, boys and girls, we can figure out that gasoline prices at my DX station went up 25% over last year. And they tell me they're going to go higher. That's when oil, you know, was down around $40 a barrel and went up to $50 a barrel. And now it's over $50 a barrel. And they tell me, I just read this the other day here, I think it was International Forecaster, they said the benchmark for oil is going to be raised to $40, and it's going to go up from there. And so now the low in oil is going to be 40, not 30, and the high in oil is going to be 60, not 50. Do you think that when oil hits $60 a barrel that it's going to sell for something more than $1.98? And I want to point out to you right now, with gasoline selling at $1.98, it's cheaper than it was in 1955 when we were paying $2.73 a barrel for oil, which was the gold price established in 1907. So the real price of gasoline today should be should be, or the barrel of oil should be $51.89 to equal $2.73 in 1907 dollars. So as long as the price of oil is out around $51.89, inflation has not hurt us a bit. Not a bit. That's the same price as $2.73 in 1907 gold dollars. Now, unfortunately, most of you people out there are making a lot more dollars. And remember the second plank to the Communist Manifesto, that socialist institution that has replaced the Ten Commandments and the Ten Principles of our Bill of Rights? They've got a heavy progressive income tax, so that you have to make a lot more dollars to pay $2 a gallon for gas than you did when we were paying 17 cents a gallon for gas. And when you make more dollars, you have to pay more tax. I can remember back in the olden days, back in 1950, when the maximum Social Security payroll deduction was $81 a year. Today, the maximum is out around $12,000 a year. Get the drift? So you got less dollars to buy that $2 gas than we had cents to pay cents per gallon years ago. We were better off in 1955 than you are in 2005. I was better off making $3,000 a year when I was a kid. I got paid $3,000 a year in board and room. And Nelson Rockefeller said that I was poverty stricken and that I was living below the poverty line. That's right, 1960, old Nelson Rockefeller. You know that liberal, socialist, communist, welfare state Republican from New York, that former governor? Yeah, he said anybody that's earning less than $4,200 a year is living below the poverty line. I was only making $3,000 in board and room, and I was flying an airplane. I could put six checks up on my wall and thumbtack them on the wall. And my boss came to me one day and he said, "You got to cash those checks." Why, I left the farm, moved to the city, and joined communism and started practicing Social Security and the income tax heavy about 1964, and I was never able to put six checks on the wall, not even six weekly checks on the wall. Hey, are we suffering from inflation, boys and girls? The Mogambo goes on to say, but it's not just me as safehaven.com. Now he goes to another newsletter over here and he says, here's safehaven.com. Did some looking at the calculation of the consumer price index, particularly at the fraction of the index for housing, which constitutes about a third of the entire index. And they write, never before have we seen this type of rate of change differential between the rate of change in the OFHEO, home price data, and the rate of change seen in the housing cost implicit in the CPI shelter data. Never, never, never. It is, or is it fair to say that never has the headline CPI been less reflective of real U.S. residential housing price inflation? Or alternatively, is it fair to say that never has the CPI been so understated relative to the actual accelerating cost of U.S. residential real estate? In all sincerity, we believe the answer to both questions is a resounding yes. And note the use of all capital letters in the word never, which indicates that this is something significant. Okay, I get your drift there, Mr. Mogambo. Now pay attention, boys and girls, because the Mogambo is citing from a newsletter called safehaven.com, who is telling us that the CPI shelter data is lying to you. They're not telling you the truth. Now, if you can't believe your government, who can you believe? Does the government ever lie? One guy asked me one time, do they ever tell the truth? Absolutely. You see, if the government always told you the truth, then you would always know the truth. And if the government always lied to you, then you would always know the truth. In order for you to be deceived, government has to tell you the truth and mix it with lies. And that's what they do, and that's called deception. Deception. And so we are deceived by Dan Rather. He comes on the air, and he tells us the truth. And then he doesn't tell us all of the truth and we become deceived. Or he lies to us. And then he mixes that with the truth and that deceives us. But you never can tell when they're lying and when they're telling the truth, except when they're moving their lips. Mogambo goes on to say, as to the CPI as a whole, that CPI now is called the Consumer Price Index. Let me tell you a little something about that. Consumer Price Index. The Department of Labor goes out in the marketplace, and they buy a box of cornflakes, and they stick that in the market cart. And then they go out and they buy this, that, and another thing, and they get about 25 or 30 items that they buy. Yeah, they only measure inflation in the United States by the prices of 25 or 30 items. Now, you can go into any Walmart store and they'll tell you right in there that we've got 8,000 items on our shelves. You can go into a supercenter and they tell you we've got 14,000 items on our shelves. And the Consumer Price Index, that's the government Department of Labor, they're going out and measuring inflation by what? 25 items? Excuse me, let me test this. What's the sampling that they're taking? 25 divided by 8,000 is what? I come to my trusty Texas Instrument calculator, I punch in 25, divide it by 8,000, and it comes up all zeros. Ah, let me fool you. Let me move this over to six decimal places. Yes, six decimal places, boys and girls. And now let me take 25 and divide it by 8,000. And it comes up to 0.003125. So they're testing 3/1,000th of the products available. Do I dare go to 14,000 products, boys and girls? Let's test that. 25 products in the CPI divided by 14,000 comes up to 0.001786. That's one. We could round it off to two. That's two items out of 1,000. The other 998 items they don't even include in the Consumer Price Index, including gasoline and the price of houses. And then they got another lying deception in there. See, if 5 years ago, and I can remember this, go back 20 years ago, I've got my first computer 20 years ago. It was 1983, cost $5,000 for an Apple computer, $5,000. Today, my boy tells me that we can buy that same Apple computer for $500. So you know what the CPI does? They come along and they say, well, see, you got a better computer today for less money, so actually the cost of living has gone down. And indeed, boys and girls, that's true. And if you take the computers that went down in price and the phone calls that went down in price, yes, it's true. And you average all those in, and when you average all of them in and take 14,000 products and you figure out what is the cost of living really going on in the United States today and what's the inflation rate, it's 12-14%. That's when you get real honest. And the government could do that. I mean, they've got unlimited money. They could go out and figure out that the Consumer Price Index is really rising at the rate of 12-14% a year and has been since Alan Greenspan started on this monetary binge 4 years ago. But you know, in all honesty, in all fairness to Greenspan and George Bush, they don't have any other choice. They have to. Because you see, back in 1933, we decided that we were going to go on to a monetary binge and that we were going to print paper money. And so in order to do that, you have to keep inflating and inflating until today, you know, it goes 1, 2, 4, 8, 16, 32, 64. Come on, boys and girls, what comes next? 128, 256, 5, 12, and 1048, or 1024, and then 2048. And when you double a penny 32 times, it's 40 million. And so now the graphs are standing on end, they're going straight up, and Greenspan is on the last doubling, and there's nothing left ahead but hyperinflation. total destruction, total meltdown. And then, like the Weimar Republic, after they go through total meltdown, and then there's this great redistribution of wealth, we'll go back to some new money. We'll have blue money or red money or yellow money or white money in place of our green money today. But will we go back to gold and silver coin? No. We will go back to some different color paper and do the same thing all over again. Well, all except some of us black market capitalists. You see, those of us in the black market, we don't deal in commercial paper. We don't practice usury and interest. We don't have bank accounts and credit cards and social security numbers and national identification cards. I know, it's crazy. It's un-American. It's just plain anti-American not to have all of these identification documents and to participate in paper money. You've got to be an enemy of the state or something. Or you have to be a practitioner of the law of God, one or the other. Now, you know, we Americans used to practice the law of God. We practiced the Ten Commandments in America, as crazy as that sounds. Americans. Yes, Americans actually practiced the Ten Commandments in America. And when we did, we practiced the monetary laws, like gold and silver coin. And our founding fathers wrote in these words in our Constitution: no state shall make anything but gold or silver coin a tender in payment of debt. And when we did that, we became wealthy, rich, like the Chinese are becoming today. And we didn't have OSHA and the EPA and seat belts and auto registration and driver's licenses either. Can you imagine a society in which people were so lawless that they didn't have driver's licenses and registration on their Conestoga wagons, seat belts, and Conestoga wagon insurance? My God, what would happen if one of them tipped over? They had an accident, run off in the ditch, and they didn't have 3A towing out in the middle of Nebraska, Wyoming, or Utah. Yeah, there was a time in America when real Americans knew how to take care of themselves. Today we've all become wards of the state, like a bunch of pigs in the Okefenokee Swamp. All right, I got to take a break and give you a caveat here, because you might think, you might actually believe that the opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you're listening to on this program belong to the advertiser, sponsors, management, or staff of the network or the radio station. And I want to dispel that notion from your mind once and for all. And that's because the sponsors and the advertisers and the management and the staff of this radio station and this network don't want to have anything to do with me. Nothing. Zero. Zilch. In fact, they're actually terrified. And so what I have to do is come on and give you this caveat every time I get on the air and say, the opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine. Mine and mine alone. And they do not necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertiser, sponsors, management, or staff of the network or of this radio station or of the great Mogambo either. But it should. And they should. And for more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please go to the website georgegordon.org, or you can call the law school direct, 417-273-4967. That's so that you can get that free general law CD package, which you all need, and it's free of charge, and we give it out gratis so that you can become more and more informed, so that you can do something intelligent, so that when the world goes to hell in a handbasket, it'll be your fault, not mine. How's that? GeorgeGordon.org, or you can call the law school, 417-273-4967. Just tell them, hey, send me that CD package or whatever the hell you're advertising free. For more information about the law school or the law hour, just go to the webpage, GeorgeGordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide on the Internet, and all of these law programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. And what that means is, if you hear something on this program and you say, oh God, what a gem of wisdom that is, I would like to have a copy of that. I'd like that recorded. I'd like to be able to show that to my friends. Well, you just go to the website, click on to the archives, and then there's an index there. And this week's programs deal with, and there'll be seven of them in the series, and they'll deal with the black market. And you just look at the black market, and it'll say 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, and there'll be 7 hours of material on the black market. Now, if you can remember that this is program number 4 in the series, number 4. If I said something in this program, you could go to that one, and you can download that on MP3 32-bit format, or if your computer won't handle that, you can reduce it to poorer quality, FM stereo quality, and it'd be 16-bit, or whatever your computer can handle, and then you too can have a beautiful, homemade, self-serving CD of this broadcast. At no cost to you whatsoever. All right, now that the caveat is done, let's take a look at some more of the Mogambo Guru. Now, he, remember, is a newsletter published on Kitco. That's KITCO.com, an easy one. Kitco.com, KITCO.com. Look for Dottie, D-A-U-G-H-T-Y. I don't know why they don't have Mogambo. I mean, after all, if he's called the Great Mogambo, I don't know why he's called Dottie. And the name Dottie is really dumb, stupid, sounds really poor. Mogambo sounds chic, modern. I love it. In fact, he calls himself the Mogambo Guru. It should be the Great Mogambo. The Great Mogambo. That's what Johnny Carson called himself, you know. It was the Great something or other. I forgot what it was. I'll think of it here in a minute. If you'll remember, he used to come out there with his gift and his garb and stumble and fall down. And he was just about as funny as the Mogambo here. Now listen to this. As to the CBI as a whole, they write, the current core rate, quotes, are really excluding the true costs of food, energy, and housing. That being the case, how can we really consider this a consumer price index when it is essentially excluding the true nature of the three largest and most important consumables? Come on, Mogambo, you don't seem to understand politics. If we were to include these three items in the consumer price index, it would be higher than the 4.9% that they admit to now, wouldn't it? Now, you know that, and so do I. And so that's why we omit 998 other items that should be in the consumer price index. I mean, if you really want to know what inflation is, you should go to Walmart and ask them. They can tell you. Walmart. They're the guys that have 14,000 products and a computer that tells you how much those products cost last month and how much those products cost this much and how much they're going to pay for them next month. And they can go back in their computer. I'm telling you, the Department of Labor is lying to you. You should go to Walmart. Walmart could tell you and tell you in a heartbeat and have it right down to the gnat's whisker. They're the guys that have got 14,000 products that you and I actually buy. I mean, actually buy. And do it every day. 80% of us, they tell us, go to Walmart every year. 80%. That includes yours truly. I've been in a Walmart in the last year. I always wondered what it was about Kmart that they couldn't compete with Walmart. They're always complaining. Everybody complains about Walmart. Now, I'm an old-timey businessman, and I've got my business principles over here, and I say, you treat your customers. You know, do unto your customer that which you'd have your customer do unto you. I got to tell you a little story. I was in a Kmart store here. It's been a long time now, about 5 years ago, but I went to a Kmart store, and I said, could you tell me where I could buy a battery? And the guy said, no, I'm just a customer here. I don't work here. And I said, oh, I'm terribly sorry. And that's because you can't tell the Kmart employees from the customers because they don't wear uniforms. So I walked around for a little bit longer, and I didn't find very many people. There weren't very many people in the store. That's because Kmart is such a poor place to shop. There's not very many people in there, and I don't know what I was doing in there, but I was looking for a battery, and I run across some guy that was messing around with one of the shelves. And I said to myself, I wonder if that guy is stocking those shelves. And I walked up to him, and I said, do you work here? So I'd already made the mistake and asked the other guy where the batteries were. He didn't know. He's just a customer. But this guy, I actually caught him stocking the shelves, and I said, do you know where the batteries are? And he said, yeah, down this aisle and turn to your right. I went down the aisle and I turned to my right and ended up in ladies' lingerie. I don't think he knew where the batteries were either. But I kept looking and looking and looking. I finally found the batteries. And I said to myself when I checked out of there, I said, I don't think I'll come back here again. Now, let me tell you what happened at the Walmart store. I went into the Walmart store, and I opened the door, and there was a guy who rushed up, jumped in my face, had a shopping cart, and said, welcome to Walmart. If there's anything I can do to help, let me know. I was dumbfounded, and he was wearing a blue uniform, and it said Walmart. We had a name tag, and he had a tag on his chest, and it said Walmart. I think it said greeter or customer service representative or something on there, and I said, wow, what kind of crazy store is this? And I took my shopping cart, and I started walking around, and as I was walking around, I saw lots of customers in there. I mean, I saw people everywhere. The store was just full of people. They're just running around like ants in a hive. And I was walking around. I saw more people wearing these blue uniforms, blue shirts, and they had these white thingies on them. And I walked up to a guy and I said, could you direct me to automotive where I need to buy a battery? And the guy says, down this aisle and to the right. Let me take you there. And he got in front of me and he took me right to the batteries. And he said, there they are. Now, is there anything more I can do for you? And now these guys are wondering why it is that Walmart's model works better. You know, I'm not very bright and I'm just an old country boy, but let me tell you something. If those Kmart guys had anything on their brains, beside bald, dead skin that's flaking off, they'd go over to a Walmart store and just walk in there with a notepad and copy down what their business model is and then go take that back to Kmart and do just exactly what they're doing over at Walmart. Just copy them like the Japanese did after World War II. Whatever the hell changes they'd make couldn't be any worse than what they're doing now, closing stores all the time now, could it? And then they went out and bought Sears the other day. They got a failed business model and they went out and bought another chain store. I don't know. Didn't make any sense to me, but then I don't want to get in the way of the happiness and success of the great Wall Street gurus who know how to make all the money and make all these stocks like Enron and Global Crossing and WorldCom. Let me give you a couple of more business principles while I'm at it here. I got about 15 more minutes. Last time, I told you about some of my business principles that I follow. I'm a guerrilla capitalist. I'm a black marketeer. I'm a free market entrepreneur. I'm a trader at law on a cash basis. I deal in gold and silver coin. I don't have a social security number, a credit card, or a bank account. Now, I know most of you are saying, well, my God, you must be starving to death. No, I'm not starving, and I'm not complaining about inflation, OSHA, the EPA, the IRS, the State Tax Commission. I don't give a rat's ass about what they do about Social Security. How do you like that? And that's because I practice the Mosaic Law, and I practice the 15 business laws or agricultural laws of the Scripture. I mean, crazy things like that. And I don't go to church either. You won't learn any biblical economic laws from the Bible in church. They do not teach biblical economics in church. You can forget that. But you can learn it here at the law school, and you can learn it here in my business school, where I quote business newsletters and crazy, lunatic, right-wing, reactionary, fringe groups like the Mugambo, along with Bob Chapman and Franklin Sanders and Bill Buckley and others. Now, number 12, when you're the seller, always deliver more than you agreed to. So when I sell you something, I'm going to give you more than you agreed to when you came to school here. And number 13, when you're the buyer, always pay more than you agreed to. And you say, how can you pay more than you agreed to? Well, remember, you said that you were going to pay this guy by the first of the month? Okay. Then write him a check and send him his money on the 25th of the month. Pay him early. It's just a wild new concept. Instead of paying him late, instead of him calling you and saying, gee, Bob, I haven't received your payment yet. And you say, it's in the mail, when in reality you haven't even deposited your check yet, and you haven't written him a check, or you don't have enough money in the bank to pay him, and you're lying through your teeth like everybody that says the check is in the mail. Pay your bills on time. Number 14, every transaction that you make must benefit all of the parties every time. So when you get into a business transaction with somebody, you want to make sure that the guy you're doing business with makes a profit, gets what it is that he came to buy. He has to leave the transaction feeling good about the transaction. Otherwise, he gets a thing called buyer's remorse, and he says, God, I'm really sorry that I came to Kmart. That was me. I had buyer's remorse. I bought the battery, and then I really felt bad. I said, I wish I hadn't been there. I wish I didn't go back there. I got a bad business model. I wasn't happy. So, I go to Walmart. And you can sit there and complain about Walmart until the cows come home, but they got a good business model, and they deliver good goods and services. I'm not complaining about them. Of course, I'm not complaining about much because I'm a pretty happy guy. 14, every transaction must benefit all of the parties every time. Never risk more than you can afford to lose. When you get into a business transaction, you know, most people, they want to get out there and buy, buy, buy. If you've got $100,000, you can't afford to risk more than $10,000. Always use the one-tenth principle. You never risk more than one-tenth of your available capital on any one deal. Guy comes along and says, well, I want to buy that motel down the street, and it's going to cost me $100,000, so I had to take my $100,000, and then, of course, when he invests his $100,000 in the motel and the deal doesn't work, he loses his $100,000. I look at the motel and I say, that deal is too big for me. I can't handle that. I'm not Donald Trump. I can't buy the Empire State Building. I can't handle that deal. Buying IBM is a bigger transaction than I can handle. So I go out and make 10 $10,000 transactions, of which two or three of them turn sour, and I lose $30,000 on the three transactions that I lost money on. And of the seven transactions that I make money on, I make $10,000 each. So 7 times 10 is 70,000, and I lost 30, so I net 40. I know that's higher mathematics to most of you people out there, but that's the way I do it. My wife and I was talking to my wife the other day, and she was talking to a Jewish fellow on the telephone. A Jewish fellow lived in New York, and he asked her how she computed her profit margin, and she said to this Jewish guy in New York City, she said, we work on the 2% principle. And he was kind of amazed, and he said, the 2% principle? And he said, how does that work? And she said, well, I buy it for a dollar, and I sell it for two, and I make it on that 2% spread. And he was just beside himself, and he says, oh my God, that's 100%. That's a full keystone. Why, that's, and he preached her a sermon, she said, for about 15 minutes and explained it. She said, well, that's getting into higher mathematics, and I'm really not able to understand that. So we'll just stay with our 2% principle. It's been working for us in the past, and it'll probably continue to work for us in the future. So I just wanted to let you know, Magombo, that we work on the 2% principle around here. Number 16, never position yourself in a transaction so that you can be taken advantage of. Did you hear me? I said, never position yourself in a transaction so that you can be taken advantage of. So that means, send me your $10,000 and I will send you the gold. See, I don't send people my $10,000. I had a guy the other day, I said, well, I sent $30,000 off to this company for my gold, and they didn't send me my gold. And I said to myself, gee, sounds like he violated business principle number 16, positioned himself in a business transaction that he could be taken advantage of. So if you can't afford to lose $30,000, what you do is you send the guy $5,000 six times. If you can't afford to lose $5,000, then you send him $1,000 30 times. If you can't afford to lose $1,000, then you better go down to your local neighborhood broker, put the money on the counter, hang on to it with your right hand, put your hand on the gold, and then relinquish your hand off of the paper, and then the transaction is made. That's the way I do business. You don't see me complaining about eBay not sending me my goods or stealing my gold or stealing my property. And that's because I follow some very simple, straightforward business principles, like never position yourself in a transaction so that you can be taken advantage of. That's business principle number 16, which precedes business principle number 17, which says never trust anyone. See that? So I don't trust you. And that's because business is not predicated upon trust, it's predicated upon performance. Performance is the hallmark, the cornerstone. It is the stuff of business. And then number 18, thou shalt not steal. Oh, I got that one from the Bible. Did you see all of these biblical principles? You know, never charge interest, never pay interest, do unto your customer that you'd have your customer do to you. And here's one, thou shalt not steal. Here's another one, number 19, in a multitude of counsel, there's safety. So anytime I've got a business problem, I go talk to my wife and I say, wife, answer this business question. And she gives me counsel. And in a multitude of counsel, there is safety. That means sit down, shut up, do what you're told, and everything will work good. And I've been following her counsel all these years, and sure enough, it just works out so good. Business principle number 20. You must be in full control of your vanity, jealousy, lust, greed, and fear. Human nature, boys and girls, is made up of five basic motivators. So as a salesman, I'm looking for your buying signs. Buying signs. And once I've determined what your buying signs are, well, then I tell you what you want to hear. I just tell you whatever lies you want me to spout off. That's all President Bush is doing. He comes out and tells the Republican faithful whatever it is that he thinks they want to hear. And he goes into one group, and it could be the Right to Life people, and he says, well, I think that Roe v. Wade is really bad stuff, and we ought to make a change there. And that's what those people want to hear, and so that's what he tells them. Then he goes off to California or Pennsylvania, and he goes to the Right to Choose group, and well, what do you people want to hear? And he tells them what they want to hear. And if he doesn't tell them what they want to hear, he sure as hell doesn't tell them what they don't want to hear. See how that works? That's called being a politician. Now, if you were honest, you'd tell people what they didn't want to hear. Yeah, you just tell people the truth. And some of the people are going to be angry with you, and some of the people are going to love you. And then the next time you open your mouth and you tell the truth again, the people that loved you last time will hate you this time, and then the people that hated you last time will love you this time. I can tell that from my mail and my telephone calls. People call up here and they say, you know, Gordon, you're the greatest thing that's been created since sliced white bread. Why, you must walk on water. And then the next phone call that comes in, or the next letter, or the next email comes in, they tell you, you know, you're the dumbest turkey that God ever put breath into, and you ought to be stoned to death where you stand. Now, tuck this away in your heart, boys and girls. You are motivated by vanity. You want to live in Bellwood Estates. You're motivated by jealousy, and you're just mad as hell about old Tom, who does live in Bellwood Estates. And you're motivated by lust, and that's why you have subscribed to the pornography channel. And you love greed, and that's why you deal in credit cards and Federal Reserve notes and have bank accounts. And you're motivated by fear, and that's why you have a driver's license and a business license, because you're afraid of your government. You're not in control of your government. And you're fearful and timid of your government. And God told you why. He said the wicked flee when none pursue. And when you're wicked and you break a lot of laws, you become timid and fearful and afraid. That's why he said that the righteous are bold as lions and the wicked flee when none pursue. That's the mindset that you develop depending upon whether you practice the law of God or you don't. Number 21, find a need and fill it. God always loved that one. Came from old Henry Kaiser. Henry Kaiser said, find a need and fill it. Now, number 22, there's no such thing as unemployment. That's a wild new concept because the unemployment rate went up 0.2% the other day. I just saw it on Dan Rather. He says, oh my God, unemployment went up 0.2%. And for those 5.4% of you out there that are unemployed, what you're saying to the rest of us is all of the work has been done. There's no more work to be done or to be accomplished. Everything has been finished. You know, God Himself said, I work and my Father works. And while the creation was completed, He's still out there working, doing something else. He's still working on more aspects of His creation. Now, I like to make $200 an hour. And when I can't make $200 an hour, then I have to work for $100. When I can't make $100, then I make $50. If I can't make $50, I work for $25. When I'm not making $25, then I hustle my tail and I make $12.50. When I can't make $12.50, I work hard for $6.25. When I can't make $6.25, I work for $3. And if I can't make $3, then I go down in my field and pick up rocks, pick up sticks, and clean up around the yard. But I keep busy. I'm doing something. All of the work hasn't been done. And on my farm, I have projects that I have imagined in my mind that I can work on for the next 200 years. 200 years of solid employment. That's why I didn't retire when I got to be 62 or 65. I've still got 200 years of work ahead of me. I don't have time to retire. Besides that, I'm a pig, and I want to make more money. And $804 a month wouldn't keep my wife in antiques. Why, my wife spends more than that on antiques every month, for crying out loud, and all we do with them is put them out on the porch. I built that porch in 1985, and when I finished, it was 2,300 square feet, and it was empty. 20 years later, it's the same 2,300 square feet, and it's plumb full, and you can't walk through it. And she filled it up in 20 years. Told me the other day, I got to build her another porch so that she'll have a place to put her antiques. My wife and I don't have time to retire, and they don't pay enough on Social Security to keep her living at the standard of living that she's become accustomed to. So that's why we can't retire. Now, a deal in your hand is worth two in your head. That's like the old adage that says a bird in the hand is worth two. What did I say now? A bird in your hand is worth two in the bush? A deal in your hand is worth two in your head. And number 25, unreasonable expectations lead to poverty. You know, I'm an old man and I've never bought a lottery ticket. Never bought a lottery ticket. Of course, I never lost a dollar in the lottery either. And I never bought any stocks. And when the great meltdown occurred here in 2000, remember, there was $7 trillion lost in the stock market? I never lost a quarter. And that's because I don't deal in commercial paper. I deal in substance. I deal in wheat, corn, beans, honey, oil, cows. I've got a gallon of cream in my refrigerator. I measure wealth by how many cows do you have? Old Joe Stalin used to measure military power by how many divisions do you have there in France? How many divisions do you have? I learned that from Joe Stalin, commonly known as Uncle Joe when I was a kid. Uncle Joe was a pretty practical guy. He might have been a tyrant. He might have been wicked and evil and rotten to the core. But he wasn't dumb. And he sure as hell understood politics. All right, I'm about out of time. Let me make a little mark here. By unreasonable expectations, we'll take it up right here next time when we come back. So let me tell you what you've been listening to here. In case you tuned in late, you've been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States and worldwide over the Internet. The Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. You can order yours by simply calling 417-273-4967 or go to the website georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. The Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, news, and current events 7 days a week. There's the signal. They say my time is up. Get off the air. So I will. See you next time, God willing. So until then, good night, friends.